The opening line is great, and it's on the cover of this edition of the book I have. They called me Honest Iago from an early age, but in Venice, this is not a compliment. It is rebuke. One does not prosper by honesty. Dun, dun, dun! That's a great opening sentence.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 312, Autobiography of Iago. Novelist and former theater dramaturg Nicole Galland has written I, Iago, a novel which tells the story of Shakespeare's famous villain and the events of the play Othello, but from Iago's point of view. It's tragic, yes, but it's also comic and crazily compelling as you watch the events of Shakespeare's play from a different angle. I was recently able to speak with Nicole via Skype about I, Iago, and I started by basically just gushing like a ridiculous fanboy.
I loved I, Iago.
Thank you.
You know, there are so many pastiches of Shakespeare. Like, this reminded me of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead.
Oh, my God. That's a huge compliment.
Well, thank you. It's just a sideways look at a famous a famous story. But it's fiction. It's historical fiction, which I kind of like, but I really like historical fiction that's funny. And this reminded me of both Christopher Moore's books.
Oh, God, that's about the biggest compliment you could possibly pay me. And I acknowledge, by the way, that I'm not as funny as Christopher Moore. It's a different, what I'm doing is a different project, but I appreciate that you appreciate the sense of humor.
But what's conscious and unconscious in when you set out to write the story of Othello from Iago's point of view?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in this case, there was a lot more conscious than is usually the case when I write a book. It is often the case that I'll write something and someone will start telling me what it's about, and it'll never have occurred to me that that's what it was about. I think in the case of Iago, I started out with a conscious awareness that what I wanted to write was a story about a good person who becomes a bad person and is too self-deluded to realize that till it's too late.
Right.
So, like, I had that as a guiding motive and motif through the story. And then knowing that that's what I wanted to do, I let myself have fun with it in ways that I don't know that I would have if I was the sort of person that took myself really seriously.
Well, and again, it's Othello is such a serious story, a tragic story.
It is a tragic story. It's a tragedy, in fact.
It is, in fact, technically a tragedy, which for my money is a much overrated genre, but that's a subject for a different debate. But it's why I love the book so much, because there was so much wit in it. Wit and heart. I mean, you find you are absolutely rooting for Iago.
Thank you. That was the goal. Yes, up to a certain point.
Well, yes,
presumably.
Because
then you see him go off the rails, and it's
and not because Othello's a bad guy.
No,
you haven't turned it around like that. It's just because you see what Iago's going through. Now it's funny how you. There's so many funny scenes where he's establishing his bona fides and how he's rising up through the ranks of the military. But he also spends a lot of time in the book protesting his innocence, which, if you know this, even if you don't know the story, that seems to foreshadow that, wait a second, he's not going to end up being that innocent.
Right. In the original draft, which my editor very brilliantly suggested that I shift somewhat in tone, in the original draft, it's written with an overwhelming sense of foreshadowing. Like, he's constantly making comments that show that it's going to end up badly. And that, while I enjoyed that, the part of me that loves, you know, Saturday morning matinee melodrama, loved doing that. The fact of the matter is, I think that we toned that down was to the book's benefit.
Well, and this is what I think I don't like about tragedy. Because you sit there reading or watching with just this overlying sense of dread.
Right.
And that's not very fun to me.
It's not. I have to say, it's kind of fun to write. I learned that in the first draft. It was It's so, and I think that's why there's so much of it. It's so incredibly, like, psychologically self-indulgent on the part of the writer.
Yes.
To go, oh, I know something big and scary and important I'm going to affect you with later. But it's actually a much better experience for the reader if they don't necessarily, even if they know it's coming, if they're not experiencing the tragedy before the tragedy happens, mm-hmm. it's just a more interesting reading experience.
Well, and I'm not, I think a lot of people would assume that I am intimate with every single one of Shakespeare's plays, especially the most famous ones like Othello. And I'm not. I don't know the story of Othello down to its third, last minor character.
Gonna tell on you.
I know. Don't. Unfortunately, nobody listens to this podcast, so nobody will ever find out. So there were many surprises, And then I found, I did a little bit of research. You don't appear to be playing fast and loose with Shakespeare's story at all.
No. In fact, I would make the argument that I actually stick to the story more than most productions, because most productions cut things.
Yes.
And there's nothing cut.
Right.
Every moment that Iago is in the play, he's also in the book.
But then one of the joys of the book is how you've invented his entire childhood and all of his offstage life.
Right, yes. Which puts his onstage life in a completely different context.
Absolutely. And so, well, that's good. And so nobody's criticized you for playing fast and loose.
No. In fact, one reviewer said it was almost a shame that I stuck to the actual play so intensely.
Now, would you call Iago, this is not your first book.
No.
Would you call it a departure from your previous books? I think of your previous books as sort of fantasy a little bit, but there's an historical element within that. Right?
Yeah, there's not. I love that you say that, because that will make lots of people buy them, because lots of people buy fantasy. But they're really historical fiction written with an attitude that you don't usually find in historical fiction. I tend to be fairly irreverent and modern in my tone.
Nice.
Which I think makes it a tone associated with the fantasy genre.
Right. Right.
But I know I do tons of research, and everything I've written about is in some way, shape, or form happened at least a little bit.
Yeah.
The book before Iago was called Crossed, and it's about the Fourth Crusade, and it's exhaustively researched. If I had to do it again, I would go easier on myself. Well, but I do think Iago's a departure, partly because all the other ones are medieval and it's Renaissance.
Right. Well, and the Crusades were such a laugh riot.
Well, you know, actually, funny you should say that. The Fourth Crusade is the one that Monty Python would have chosen. Things that happened in the Fourth Crusade. If you tell the story of the Fourth Crusade, it takes about 10 minutes, so I won't do it now. But I don't think I've ever done like a brief narration of the Fourth Crusade without people bursting into disbelieving laughter, because it went so off course. And there's a character, one of the narrators in that definitely has an attitude about it, but he is so cynical that I think that what I like about what I've done with Iago is that he's genuinely, his heart is in whatever he's doing. He really believes in his actions. Yeah. Even if they end up going in a very bad direction, whereas the character that's narrating the Fourth Crusade book is like, this is really screwed up from the beginning.
Well, I love that. Historical fiction buttressed by impeccable research, yet informed by Monty Python.
There you go. That's it. That's what I'm going for.
Hi, I'm Brian Dennehy, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSE the RSE? This week we head to the Bass Performance Hall in Fort Worth, Texas to perform the ultimate Christmas show abridged, followed up by performances in St. Louis, Missouri, Anchorage, Alaska, and on December 5th next week, we begin a three-week run of the Christmas show at San Diego Repertory Theater in San Diego, California. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
We first met when you were working as the dramaturg at Berkeley Repertory Theater.
That's correct, yes.
And you were trying, God bless you, to get the Reduced Shakespeare Company booked there. It hasn't happened yet, but the conversations are ongoing
over
there.
Good. I remain hopeful.
So first of all, what is a dramaturg? exactly in your mind?
A dramaturg. Wow, that's. I like to say that a dramaturg is sort of a resident nerd for any production, but it depends. Dramaturgs have two different jobs depending on if what you're dealing with is the development of a new play or the putting on of an established play. Mm. Like if you're dramaturging a Shakespeare play, you show up with a lot of background historical information, a lexicon, so that if any of the actors have any questions about what words or phrases mean, you sort of have to be the fact checker, the resident nerd. That's really the best phrase I can think of.
Right, right.
You also, and then when you're developing a new play, you play a different role, but that's, we don't have to go there since that's not what this is about. and another role that you sort of play, whether it's a new play or an old play, is the director, in an ideal situation, this often does not happen, but in an ideal situation, the director explains to you what their vision and goal is for the production. And then over the course of the rehearsal period, especially near the end, you sort of come in as an extra set of eyes and say to them, okay, so, you know, you wanted to make this play about the, how the underclass were tromped upon by the upper class, but in fact, you've turned it into something that's racial instead of class, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, but so this book, I, Iago, was written because of sort of from your dramaturgical and directorial work, right?
Sort of. Yeah. There's a little bit of a tangent. It's not that direct. I left Berkeley Rep because I was suddenly in a position to be a full-time novelist. And so I started doing that and I started craving theater. It's very, when you're in, you know this, I mean, when you have the theater bug, even if you think that you've sort of hung up your theater hat, it's very hard to do that permanently.
Yeah.
So I moved back to Martha's Vineyard, which is where I'm from, and I got involved with the Vineyard Playhouse, despite my best intentions not to be doing theater anymore. First, I was a dramaturg for them, and then I played a little role, and then I assisted directed a show, and then I directed As You Like It. And while I was doing that, the cast of As You Like It and their associated spouses and friends, everyone was so tight. It was a really great group of people. And one of us, it might have been me, but it might have been somebody else, said, God, it's too bad there's not more Shakespeare done on Martha's Vineyard, because every summer there's a comedy done in the outdoor amphitheater. It's totally gorgeous. But in the winter, when we really need entertainment, like there's not enough actors around, you're never going to get the winter population of Martha's Vineyard to step into a theater, hardly at all, but definitely not to see Shakespeare. So we came up with this crazy model that we would do called Shakespeare for the Masses, that we would adapt scripts so they could be done in a single day of rehearsal, script in hand. So at the beginning of our second season, Chelsea McCarthy, who is my associate, my co-conspirator, said, I would really, really like to do Othello, as I'd like to open the second season with Othello, but I really would like Billy Melidi to play. I'm playing Amelia, and I would really like Billy Melidi to play Iago. And Billy lived up in Boston, so I sent him an email saying, would you come down? And he had been our fool in King Lear the season before. Would you play Iago? And he wrote back and said, oh, I'd love to play Iago. Can you send me the script ahead of time? Because I'm not very good at cold readings and I'd like time to prepare. So I sent him, as soon as we had the Othello script ready, I sent it to him. When he showed up on the Vineyard for our day and a half of rehearsal, he said, I hate to say this, but I've just been really busy and I haven't had a time to look at the script. And I said, that's okay. We haven't messed around with it like we have with all the others, but we both respect the tragedy of Othello. So we didn't mess around with it. It's just the same script, shorter. And he said, oh no, you don't understand. I haven't read the script. I have not read Othello. And I got this little panicked feeling and said, wait, you said you wanted to play Iago, but you don't know the play. Why did you say you want to play Iago? And he said, well, I'm not an idiot. Everyone I know wants to play Iago. I just don't know why. So I was like, okay, so you're here, it's the evening, we start rehearsals tomorrow, let's sit down and talk about this. And we stayed up until about 2 a.m. reading through the script and talking about it. And for someone that didn't know the play and hadn't done much Shakespeare, he's an Irish actor, so the Irish canon he knows cold, British, not so much. He asked really great questions and we had fabulous conversations about it and he was a terrific Iago, but I felt like we had just scratched the surface. So when he left to go back up to Boston, because we rehearsed for a day and a half, we have two performances, that's it, it's over. And he went back up to Boston 4 days after I learned he had not played the part, and I was I was like, I had this itch to scratch, and I thought, well, I'm never going to direct again for real, so I'm never going to direct the play. I'm obviously never going to play the part. What do I do with this impulse to try to understand the character? And I had an epiphany about a particular element near the end of the, what's now the end of the novel. And I sat down and I wrote up about 20 pages and an outline and sent it to my editor and said, this is really crazy, but do you think that this can be a novel? And she sold it to my usual editor, my agent. Sorry, I sent it to my agent and she sold it like instantly. And then the fun postscript to that is I spent the winter writing it. And the following summer, Billy, who had played Iago, came down to the Vineyard just on vacation. And very rapidly and most unexpectedly, we fell in love and are now married.
Boy, this has a happy ending on several levels.
Yes.
It's more than one happy ending. You got a marriage and a fantastic book out of this dopey little stage reading performance. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, my God, you've set the bar kind of high now, I think, for other directors and dramaturgs who set out to help an actor to understand the character. Hang on, I'm going to go away for 6 months and write a novel about your character. I'll be right back.
Well, I have to say, I'm not... First of all, I think that the... Billy would not... I hope Billy gets a chance to play Iago again, because he's such a natural for it. But I don't think he would play it the way he exists in the book. Right. I think that what I've written is innately a very novelistic Iago. I don't think that you can take, because it's so internal. Even though Iago in the play talks to the audience constantly, he has a certain attitude that's a different attitude than my Iago. So I don't think that anyone could read the book and then use it as a manual for how to play Iago. They could use it as a manual for the backstory, but not for
That's what I was going to say. As actors and authors, we have to step into the other guy's shoes. And this is a great way. You know, everybody sees themselves as the hero of their own life.
That is true.
Lives, even the bad guys. Can I ask whether you have a routine? You're at your desk at 9 a.m., or is it one of those things where here's what I do. I get an idea, and I write every single waking hour of the day until it's done.
That's what I used to do. My life has been so absurdly peripatetic that I don't really have an opportunity to develop a routine. My first book, I really didn't have a life, and I wrote 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. Iago was a little bit different, and my life was shifting so much during the course of writing it. The project that I wrote after that kind of had a routine, because we kind of had a life that had a certain routine to it. But now our life is up, all, you know, over the next 2 months, I'm going to be living in different places every 2 weeks, because that's just sort of how life is rolling at the moment.
Right.
So the routine will change every 2 weeks.
And now have you realized that you can establish a series now by taking all of Shakespeare's bad guys? Is your next sequel going to be I, Claudius?
That is very clever. You clever man, you.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your villainous autobiographies via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to Webmaster Matt Rippy, Green-Eyed Monster Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Rob and Victoria Denton. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Mr. Brian Dennehy, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 312 936ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
And another thing is that, like, people keep saying to me, oh, I guess I better read the play first, and I don't think that anyone should do that.
No, in fact, yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, you don't have...
I think you should be forbidden to read the play if you're planning to read the novel.
Not only
until maybe after you've read the novel.
Yeah, no, not only do you not have to read the play, in fact, you should.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.